So it's chapter 29, in the middle. I'll tell you where it is. It's, I don't know where it is in that book, but it's... I don't know. It's Bifrat Kesha Yizkor, if you know what, I'll take it all. Huh? So Yizkor Tumat Nafsha, that one?
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. Yeah, there we are. Very good. Good guess on my part. okay. So, what I want to try and do today is actually want to try and finish, if we can, chapter 29. That's a lot, but I'm not going to do everything inside. I think that's what I'll do it. But we'll summarize some of it. All right. So, let's just summarize, first of all, till we got you. So chapter 29, the Alter Rebbe started to talk about something else that a Benyamin needs to think about. So before that, we have three chapters on sadness, and when a person is sad unnecessarily, either from physical things, heavenly things, foreign thoughts during the day, foreign thoughts during davening, and for each one there was a different strategy, because simcha is critically important. Okay. Then, new subject, in chapter 29, he started talking about the idea of timtum halev. The Benyamin is doing everything right, but somehow there's a blockage of the heart. He's not able to inspire himself with the love of Hashem. He's not able to daven properly because there's a blockage of the heart. Okay. It's called Timtum Halev. And therefore the Neshama, he's got everything right. He's thinking, he understands, he's learning, but it's not penetrating. It's not coming through and being integrated into his Nefesh HaBamis. That was the basic idea. So he said, he brought the Zohar. Right? Zohar says that a wood that is not able to catch fire needs to be broken up. So essentially he said you have to break up the clipper, you have to smash it up a little bit, right? And how do you do that? So he had a whole thing where he said that the clipper in the person, that's the person. Why? Because the conscious part of the person, the identity of most people, except for tzaddikim, is the nefesh habamis. So, for all intensive purposes, on a practical level, on a conscious level, we are the nefesh habamis. And therefore, when we talk about splintering up the piece of wood so the fire should catch, that means we have to splinter ourselves up. We have to humble ourselves a little bit. We have to break ourselves. Why should we use euphemisms? We'll do this properly. Chassidim learned Tanya, right? Which is to we have to break ourselves up. We have to break up the nefesh habamis to understand that it's a problem. The nefesh habamis is a problem, and it should feel a little bit broken. He did say that the tzaddikim are different, right? Because tzaddikim, their identity is a nefesh lekis. So he brought from Hillel. Remember, Hillel said when he went to eat, he said, "I'm going to do chesed. I'm going to do kindness with the poor one." Means Nefesh HaKis is going to feed my animal. Okay? That's different. But the Beinoni is the Nefesh HaBamis. That's even a Beinoni. How much more so? Someone's less than a Beinoni, right? So, okay. So that's how we have to do it. Now, he said, he made the point that the Nefesh HaBamis, what do we need to tell ourselves? We need to remind ourselves, just from the point of being of who we are, i.e. the Nefesh HaBamis, we have to remind ourselves of how far we are from Hashem, to break up to invoke a yearning, a brokenness to some real way. Why are we far? Remember, we're talking about the Bein here. The Bein hasn't done any Averis. So why is he far? He's far because even the Beinoni, right, might have a certain Timtum Halev, a stoppage of the heart, because he is an Nefesh HaBamis, because it's possible for him, although he never gives in to his indulgences and his temptations, but it's possible for him to have those temptations. So the very thing that a person can even have those temptations means that he's far away from Hashem. Otherwise, how do you have such temptations? Right? By the way, that's by design. It's not that we did anything wrong. We are designed that way. Most people are not supposed to be tzaddikim, right? But nevertheless, we need to be acknowledged of how distant we are. And not only that, the fact that we can, and the fact that it's possible to have a temptation, right? Not only for indulgences, which are permitted things, but even for sometimes doing avera, which the Nefesh HaBamis will never give into, but nevertheless, it's possible for him to have that temptation, he becomes actually worse than animals, real animals, right? Why? Because at the end of the day, animals who are animalistic, they're just doing what Hashem told them to do. Right? The person is commanded to do differently, he's commanded to be higher. And therefore, he's worse than an animal, right? That's what's part of the breaking of ourselves. By the way, he mentioned it, we didn't go into this last time, but he mentioned an interesting pasuk. And the pasuk that he mentioned was, he says, what do you mean you're worse than animals? Because he says, it says, David HaMelech says, V'onoichi toy la'as, I am a worm, v'loy ish, and not a man. Right? So like you being, the fact that I have such temptations means that I'm like an animal, right? So I was listening the other day to Rabbi Yoel Kahn, I've mentioned him many times, who was the transcriber of the Rebbe Sichus. He also did the whole Tanya on telephone in Yiddish. Someone just, you know, he says beautiful things. Sometimes it's nice to get the extra depth, so to speak. And he asks a question, he says, well, but the Alter Rebbe seems to be contradicting himself. He says a person who can have these kind of temptations means he's worse than an animal. And then he brings a pasuk and he says, David HaMelech said, Anochi talas, I'm a worm and not a person. He didn't say he's worse than a worm, he just said he is a worm. So why it's worse? Why is it worse than an animal? Just say it's like an animal. Follow the question? Yeah. He's trying to make a point that you're worse than an animal if you do this, right? If you can have such temptations, or you have some sense, or you have such tithes, such desires to go against Hashem. And he says, worse, he's worse than an animal, because the animal only does the will of Hashem. But the pasuk that he brings doesn't seem to fit, because David HaMelech says, I am a worm and not a person. But it didn't say he's worse than a worm, right? So he says, the Chassidim used to say, the pshat is like this. Yeah, David HaMelech says, David HaMelech was a person, right? And he says, I'm a worm and not a person. Now, why do you have to add not a person? You just say, I'm a worm, right? You know we're talking about David HaMelech. David HaMelech's trying to make a point that when you become like a worm, but you really should be an ish, you really should be a person that becomes like an animal is worse than an animal. An animal's created that way. A person who's an animal is worse than an animal. Anyway, okay. Right. That's what we got off to last time. Now, the Alter Rebbe gives you, and this is the part I'm not going to do so much. I'm not going to do so much inside. I'll just do it outside. The Alter Rebbe gives here a few more thought processes that the Beinoni who's struggling with Timtum Halev, and how much more so those that are lower than a Beinoni are struggling to be inspired, should think about, should reflect upon, all for the purposes of putting down and pushing down the Nefesh HaBamis, right? Again, I'm assuming that these kind of reflections that the Alter Rebbe is talking about here is not constant, right? We're not supposed to come. It's times that we designate in order to lower the Nefesh, in order to humble the Nefesh HaBamis, right? Break the Nefesh HaBamis. So that it should open up and make room for the fire of the Nefesh HaLikis, right? And he says like this. First, another thing that Benyamin could think about, not only that he's potentially able to have desires that are against Hashem, he should also think about the averis that he did do in his lifetime. Because the Benyamin is someone that says, Benyamin is someone that never does averis, right? Now, it's interesting that the expression that the Alter Rebbe uses all the way back in chapter 12, or even before that, he says, the Benyamin is someone who never did an avera and never will do an avera. But that's not the pshat, as all the commentaries explain. It never means he never did an avera or he never will do an avera. First of all, you can't say about any person he'll never do an avera because a person has free choice, right? You also can't say that a person had never ever done an avera. I mean, that excludes almost anyone for even aspiring to be a Benyamin. Like, what does that mean, right? That means a person who did an avera when he was 14, that's it? He's doomed for life? He can never reach a Benyamin? I mean, it's hard enough to reach Benyamin as it is, but does that mean that we cancel a person out? No. Because a person can do tshuva, of course, and a person can be a Benyamin. What that means over there is that a Benyamin is someone that at his present state, his present mindset, and his present self-control is such that it's like he never did an avera, and in the context that he is now, he never will do an avera. That context could change. It's not foolproof, obviously. That's why it's a constant struggle. That's what Alter Rebbe said in the previous chapter, that the milchama, the war, is the entire lifetime, right? Okay. But nevertheless, therefore, you can have a Benyamin who did do an avera. So therefore, one of the ways to when he's having this blockage of the heart, the timtum halev, besides understanding that he is an nefesh habam, his nefesh habam is so distant from Hashem, even if it's free from averus, he also has to reflect on the averus that he did do. Now, what does that help? He did tshuva, so why should he think about those averus? The answer is, because although we say tshuva, of course, cleanses everything, and that's true, but sometimes it's not completely that way, because the impurity that we introduced through doing averus, right? When a person does something wrong, he explains, and he causes above in the heavens a certain stain and a blemish, that could surface today, even though I did it 10 years ago, because when I talk about what I accomplished in the higher worlds, those higher worlds transcend time. And therefore, it could come back even when I've done tshuva. And he says, because specifically to know that there are different levels of tshuva, and everything's according to the time that a person is. And also, it could be that every day the tshuva that I did needs to be accepted. And it could be that today my tshuva is not being accepted so much. And that's why the Benyan is saying, I have Timtum Halev, right? Or sometimes Hashem will give the person Timtum Halev because he wants the person to do a higher tshuva. Tshuva has many levels. So yes, a basic tshuva everyone can reach, and a basic tshuva always effective. But it could be the Benyani who finds himself in that position that his heart is blocked. Maybe Hashem means he didn't accept his tshuva properly, because he wants him now, until now it was accepted, but he wants him now to be elevated to a much, much higher level. High level of tshuva. Okay, that's one thing. Then he says, how about a person who really knows he didn't do any averus? He's clean. Problem, right? Yeah, so a person is clean, but he says you still need to reflect on all your thoughts, speeches, action, everything you've done from when you were born. Right? Well, they're all so holy, well, they're all godly. Maybe you never did anything wrong, but every thought was l'shem shamayim. Every thought, right? We'd learn to bend, he really, the only thing is, he's the only serves Hashem. He doesn't even do something that's unholy. Forget about averus, right? So does that mean every thought that he ever had, every action that he ever did was 100% for God? It wasn't even if it was permitted, but it wasn't mundane. Can't really guarantee him. So maybe it could be that's why he's experiencing the Timtum Halev. And he says, he adds another thought. Oh, and he says, he needs to reflect that every time he did have thoughts that weren't holy, he was being connected to something that is unholy, and therefore that's affecting him now. And then he says, furthermore, he also has to reflect on his dreams. This is very interesting. He quotes the Zohar, right? Most of us, including the Benyani, dream nonsense, right? Right? We dream nonsense, we dream negative things. So dreams like this, just I want to give you a little bit of insight about dreams, just very, very briefly. So there's three kinds of dreams, really. There's dreams that tzaddikim have. And tzaddikim have dreams where they actually really experience great things and they learn great things. Because they're so pure and so holy, right? There's a famous story with Arizal, that he was once sleeping on a Shabbos afternoon, and a Talmud, a disciple of his, walked into the room and he saw him dozing, but he saw his lips moving. So he went closer to him to hear what he was saying, and inadvertently woke him up. And Arizal told him, it's a pity you woke me up, because while I was sleeping for those few minutes, I learned, I think it was Parshas Bullock. He said, I learned from Shemayim commentary in Parshas Bullock that would take a person in this world 80 years to learn. And I was like, all right, okay, that's tzaddik. Then there's us who just, no, then there's dreams that are negative dreams. Right? The Gemara talks about sometimes people dream certain things, it could be negative, it could mean something. That's why in the Siddur, you can see in the Siddur, there's a thing called Hatovas Chaloim. There's a thing like a ceremony to make with three people, and they say psukim and everything. It's about neutralizing the negative effects of a dream. But the Rebbe writes in many places, people ask him about doing it today, doing that thing. I mean, I haven't been present, but people have done that. They dreamt something terrible, it's going to happen, whatever. And they made this thing. But the Rebbe believes that nowadays we shouldn't worry about it. I mean, there is a little bit of that. For example, there's a thing in the Siddur with a Kohanim Duchen on Yom Tov. There's a prayer to say that Hashem should make all our dreams good. It's apparently part of the energy of that bracha, according to the Gemara, is good for dreams. Okay. But nevertheless, the Rebbe writes in a number of places that a person dreams today, he shouldn't worry about his dream altogether. The best thing is just stop worrying about it, because the third category of dreams is just nonsense. We just dream nonsense. Why? Because we dream what we think about during the day, either consciously or subconsciously. That's what we do. We have stupid thoughts during the day, so we dream stupid thoughts.
But we're all sleeping up, so we have bad dreams.
Yeah, but real bad dreams. But our bad dreams aren't bad dreams, they're just stupid dreams. Most of them. Yeah, obviously, we want to sleep calmly, so ask Hashem not to give us bad thoughts and bad dreams. But once we have what we call a bad dream, we shouldn't worry about it. It's just, I mean, if a person really wants to worry about it, the best thing I think that it was said is just give a few coins to Zdokah and forget about it. Otherwise, today, if we start worrying about these things, we'll be in a lot of trouble. We will just plunge into deep anxiety because we have them so often. But the Beinoni now, when he's trying to break up his Nefesh HaBamisah to catch life with Nefesh HaLakis, he should reflect on his dreams, because not reflect on the content of the dreams or the negative impact of the dreams. He should reflect upon that he dreams nonsense. Because if it was a real Beinoni to the highest level and he was only thinking things that were good and godly, he wouldn't have those dreams. So the fact that he has those dreams means he's not quite there. And that should bring him, again, to understand and appreciate his distance from Hashem. And then he should really cry out, and he'll make his Nefesh HaBamis feel bad, which means make himself feel bad about himself, not in a negative sense, but in other words, understand his distance, understand his brokenness of the Nefesh HaBamis, and that will create a splintering of Nefesh HaBamis in order to let in the light of the Nefesh HaLakis. Okay. That is the summary of the other three strategies. Now, then the Alter Rebbe turns course a little bit. And this is on the next page, Lamed Zayin. It's also by a dot. And the words are Vegam Yarim Oleho Bekoil. Could be the next day. I don't know exactly how it works over there in Natanya. You have it? Yeah. Then he says, it almost sounds like a continuation of before, but Chassidim always knew that actually Alter Rebbe is changing course now, and the Rebbe explains this quite a bit, and the Rebbe has a particular way to learn this next piece of Tanya. And he says like this, also what the Nefesh, again, all in the same thing, what to do about the blockages of the heart, right? Just before I go further, I just want to, you're learning about a Beinoni, right? The question is, what about people that aren't Beinonis? They might be aspiring Beinonis, but they're not Beinonis. They're worse than Beinonis, right? So I think it's also relevant perek. In other words, the concepts are relevant. Now, will we get rid of, first of all, a timtum halev that we have is not on the level of a Beinoni anyway. Beinoni, like the timtum halev, is surprising because he's like doing everything right, but it's not catching light. Our timtum halev is understandable because we have such a lot of nonsense in us. So of course we're going to have timtum halev. If we apply what he's saying here, will it fix our timtum halev? Probably not, but at least it'll make it better. So the concepts are relevant, just not on the same level as Beinoni, as I'm saying. Okay. Says the Alter Rebbe, V'gam Yarim Oleho Bekoil. Also, I'm going to read the words and I'm going to explain to you why it's actually changing course. Complete change of course. He says, it sounds like the same thing, but it's not. V'gam Yarim Oleho Bekoil. Also, you should scream at the Nefesh HaBamis. Scream it, like you should put it down. Lashpilah, to lower it. Like it says in Chazal, K'maymer Hazal, Le'olam yargiz odom yetzer toiv al yetzer hara. A person should always make his yetzer toiv angry with his yetzer hara. Should scream at the yetzer hara, at the evil inclination. Follow? Brings a passage, right? Sh'nemar rigzu v'goyim. The Hainuds means, Lirgoy is al nefesh abamis. You should become angry with the nefesh abamis. Now, what is he actually talking about? I'm going to say, we're going to learn what he's supposed to scream at him about, but, right? But what's he saying here? What do you mean you should scream at the Nefesh HaBamis? What does it mean? You want to follow inside? Yeah. Right. What does he mean here? You should scream at the animal soul? Or you should scream at the Yetzer Hara? We just finished learning that you need to... We just finished learning that you should break up yourself, so to speak, because you are the Nefesh HaBamis. So now what is all of a sudden saying that you should scream at your Nefesh HaBamis? What do you mean? You are the Nefesh HaBamis. Screaming at yourself? He doesn't say that. He says you should scream at the Nefesh HaBamis, which is very different to what he was talking about before, right? Before we're saying you should think about how distant I am from Hashem, I have bad thoughts, I have bad dreams, I have this, I have that, and the other. In other words, it's all about me. Because I am a nefesh abami, so I've got to splinter myself up a little bit to let in the light of the nefesh elokis, who's not me. Like we know before, we said, neshama shenosata bi. Neshama that you gave me. Me meaning the nefesh abami, right? We learned that before. So what does he mean this? What is he talking about? Who are you screaming at? Are you screaming at yourself? What? So the Rebbe learns what's happening here is like this. The Alter Rebbe actually is changing complete. It's a change of direction. And the following is true. Like this. Everything we said till now is based on the principle that we are the Nefesh HaBamis. The Benyan is the Nefesh HaBamis. Right? That's the identity of the Nefesh HaBamis. That's the identity of a Benyani, and lower than a Benyani, of course, the Nefesh HaBamis. He Yod HaMatzvah, that's the person, the Nefesh HaBamis. However, that's only on a conscious level, on a superficial level or an external level. However, on a deeper level, that is not true. That's important to understand. On a deeper level, we are the Nefesh HaLakis. The real subconscious identity of the Yid, every Yid, is a Nefesh HaLakis. Right? Therefore, and here I'm putting in what some of the commentaries explain. It's not the Rebbe says exactly, but because it also explains the order of what the Alter Rebbe is doing it here. Therefore, when a person is only operating on a superficial level, like we learned till now, like most people operate.
Consciously.
Right? The only way to deal with our Timtum HaLev is to break ourselves. To say, well, I'm the Nefesh HaBamis. The fact that I exist, I'm Klippah, I'm far from Hashem. I have a yearning, I start to cry a little bit. Whatever the case is, right? As the Alter Rebbe says. Like the Alter Rebbe says just before this, that when you go through this whole process before, you'll really have this yearning. You'll feel like a sort of a lowness, a brokenness. And you'll want to connect to light, right? So that's good to start opening up the holes to let in the fire of the Nefesh HaBamis. But it could be that that's not enough. It could be that you let in a little bit the fire of the Nefesh HaKis, but it hasn't taken away the blockages of the Nefesh HaBamis yet completely. But what you have done at least is, you've a little bit let the Nefesh HaKis in, so you've connected a little bit with who you really are. Right? And then when you've connected a little bit with who you really are, and you've discovered that your pnimius, your real inner truth, is that you are the Nefesh HaKis, and maybe this won't happen all the time, maybe it'll happen just momentarily or a little bit, so you connect to your Nefesh HaKis, that's a good time then to now have the Nefesh HaKis finish off the job. Until this point, Nefesh HaKis couldn't finish the job because Nefesh HaKis didn't have it in. It was not catching light. It was not making an impact on Nefesh HaBamis. Nefesh HaBamis, the person is aware of that my Nefesh HaBamis is ruling his control. Not in control of Averis. I mean, we're talking about a Benyan here. But control of the inspiration, control of the fire, control of the feeling. Okay, so you have to knock about, you have to knock up and splinter up the Nefesh HaBamis so it should start to burn. Right? When you do that, you're able then to go deeper and then connect with your Nefesh HaLakis, and now your Nefesh HaLakis can finish off the job. That's what he means now, that now the Yetzer Tov, or you know, on a Tanya level, the Nefesh HaLakis, which is a bit deeper than the Yetzer Tov, can now finish the job by now screaming at the Nefesh HaBamis, completely destroying it, in other words, right? Okay, so let me explain. So he interchanges the words here, Nefesh HaBamis, we didn't say Nefesh HaLakis here, we talked about Nefesh HaBamis, and interchanges the word Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara are an outcome of Nefesh HaLakis and Nefesh HaBamis. The Yetzer Tov is the actual inclination. I'll give you an example. Your Nefesh HaBamis, right, is your animal soul. It's the source of your physical life. It's a raw, materialistic power of desire, right? When it starts to actually have those desires, those temptations, and it starts to even have the temptation to do something which is against Hashem, like an Avera, that's the Yetzer Hara. It's an outcome of Nefesh HaBamis, right? To put it in different words, Nefesh Abam is transformable. It can be elevated. It can be channeled. It can be used for good. The Yetzirah can't. Yetzirah is just evil. It wants you to do bad. That's what it is. The Nefesh Abam is more the raw desire. Yetzirah is more like the applied desire to actually do something that Hashem is not happy with, right? Yetzirah also. Yetzirah is coming from the Nefesh HaKis. There's an outcome in the Nefesh HaKis. Nefesh HaKis is the godly soul, just wants to connect to Hashem. Yetzirah is the inclination and applying that energy and saying, so put on tefillin, light a Shabbos candle, give tzedakah, help another yid, whatever the case. So in Gemara, normally it's Yetzirah, Yetzirah that is mentioned. But that's like the secondary level. Tanya goes to the source of it, which is your animal soul and your godly soul. But it's a bit interchangeable. He says that's why now the Nefesh HaKis has to now completely subdue the Nefesh HaBamis. And this is not easy stuff to listen to. Let's go. He says, Nahainu, it means like this. Lirgo is al Nefesh HaBamis, Yisra'ara. To be angry with the Nefesh HaBamis, which becomes the Yetzirah. The Koil Rash V'Roiges, with a real voice, a tone of anger. And no, I don't exactly say it, the aggression almost, right? Now, not verbally, you don't go around screaming at your Yetzirah. It means b'machshavta, in his thoughts. Loimra loy, to tell him, atara, you are bad, v'rosha, you are wicked, the meshukets, you're despicable, the mesuev, you're abominable, the manuvel, a lowlife, right? Otherwise, use all the names against Nefesh HaBamis. K'chol ha-shemoy shekoru loy chachameinu zal. With all the names that the Chazal used for the Yetzirah. Be'emes. And you scream at him, you say, Ad mustai tastir lefonai. Until when are you going to block before me? The Oiren Sof, Baruch Hu, the blessed infinite light of Hashem, Hamamali kol almin, which fills all the worlds. Hoyo hoybe v'yiyye b'shove. Hashem is here, Hashem is right here. How do I know Hashem is here equally? But mokim ze in this place, Shani Olav, where I am, Hashem is here, Hashem is present. K'moysha hoyo Oiren Sof, Baruch Hu, levadai koidim shenivra oylam. Like Hashem was on his own before the world was created. And Hashem is still here without any changes. We know the famous idea. Like it says, I am Hashem, I have not changed. We say every day in davening, in the introduction to davening, you are the way you are before the world was created, you are the way you are after the world was created. The illusion that we have that is different is just the power of tzimtzum. But really Hashem is exactly the same. Hashem is higher than time. V'atom menuvel, a new low life. Machisho emes, you are trying to deny the truth. Hanira le'inayim, which is open to our eyes, the kul, which is really truth. In other words, the kula kameik alachosher, everything is nothing compared to Hashem. The b'china riyah chushis, in a way of really understanding it properly with a certainty that is analogous to seeing something. In other words, what are we saying? We're saying like this. Once you connect Nefesh HaKis, Nefesh HaKis now has the power to put down Nefesh HaBamis completely and to strengthen itself and to overpower itself over the Nefesh HaBamis by metaphorically screaming at the Nefesh HaBamis and saying, I'm trying to connect Hashem, I'm trying to let in the light of Hashem, I'm trying to reveal the truth, I'm trying to give me the person who the person is. I'm trying to give them the consciousness that Hashem is revealed here like he was before the world. I'm trying to instill that amunah in the yid that Hashem is here exactly the same as he was before. And that he should have it with such certainty that it should be as if he could see it. Right? We know the difference between seeing and hearing, right? Hearing is when you hear something, you believe it, but it's not certain. See something, exactly as him. Right? Through this, yoyil and nafsh lakis, this anger, the nafsh lakis, so to speak, it's not the anger like we have anger, it's the strength, and always the screaming. It's a power, it's an overpowering that the Nefesh HaKis has towards the Nefesh HaBamis, right? Yoyil the Nefesh HaKis, that will help the Nefesh HaKis. It will strengthen the Nefesh HaKis. Lahoyer a neha be'emes, to actually illuminate its eyes. Yichud Eirin Sof Baruch Hu, that oneness of Hashem, Beriya Chushis, with an absolute seeing like. Loy Shmir, not like only listening, Va'avon Levada, K'mesh Kosev, V'mokim Acher. Shezehu Shoyresh Kol Avoida. And he says an interesting line. He says, this is the root of all the service of Hashem. Everything that we do, and this is the role of really the foundation of Chassidus Chabad, based on the Baal Shem Tov and the whole essence of Tanya. Everything we do is one thing, to reveal the oneness of Hashem. There's nothing else. Only true existence is Hashem. Therefore, that impacts our lives. That's why everything we do should be centered around Hashem. Everything we do only should be for Shem Shemayim, right? In other words, like this, I'll just give you a little bit of words to understand this, to relate to this. The reason why the Nefesh of a Kiss has to scream in the Nefesh of a Bahamis, right? We learned before that one of the things, it's hard, you know, there's an expression in the Yiddish that people say, you've heard that you can't dance at two weddings at the same time, right? A little bit in Tanakh, we have the story also with Eliyahu HaNavi on Har HaKarmel when he was challenging the prophets of Baal. Famous story, one of the Haftaris. And he promised, because at the time of the first temple, Tamil Yanovi, there was a huge epidemic of pagan worship. And they served this god called Baal, this idol called Baal. And Eliyahu HaNavi gathered all the people and he challenged them. And he said, we'll build two altars. You know, the whole story, and we'll try it, and we'll see. You bring an altar, and we'll see if your god brings a fire and consumes your carbon. And then we'll do one for Hashem, we'll see if he does. And that's what happened. And they screamed that Hashem will look him. But he has a very interesting line there, a beautiful line. He says to the people, he says, Ad Mosai Atem Poischim Al Shteya Sefim. Until when are you going to follow the two paths together? And he says, Im La Hashem, Hashem, if Hashem, choose Hashem, Im La Baal, choose a Baal. Now, the question is, why do you do that? You know, a little bit is better than nothing, right? Yeah, which is true on one hand. On the other hand, ambivalence is the worst thing. For the person to really serve Hashem, it's not just to say, I love Hashem, I'm going to do what he wants, but I also love the pizza, and I also love the world, and I also love, you can't do that. It's one or the other. To do it true, right? Now, obviously, we have enough Shekhis, at least in our mind, we should know there's only one thing. There's only one path. And the Bayanis kind of reaches that to a certain degree, even though he still has a temptation. And when there's a timtum alev, when there's a blockage of the heart, the second stage after you've broken up the nefesh habamis a little bit is the nefesh lakis to build up that clarity that I have disdain for anything else. Not just like, yes, Hashem is one, but you know, there's a little room for something else also. You know what I'm saying? Like, no. That's the chassidus approach. There's nothing, no room for anything else. Only Hashem. And one of the ways to do that is, there's a concept. We say it's really upset about a tzaddik reaches this completely. This is the concept of a tzaddik, that he has complete disdain for anything bad. He hates bad. He hates clip, and if he'll never entertain it at all, because of them even have to struggle. But that mindset and that whole thing should be even in the Bainini, or even the aspiring Bainini. There's a pasuk that says, we say it every Friday night, Simtilim, Oyave Hashem Sinura. Those that love Hashem hate bad, hate evil. Right? Now we say evil doesn't mean you hate people that murder. No, that's not what it means. Or you hate murderers, or you hate real bad. Bad means anything that's not godly. That's what. Klippa, anything that's klippa. So this is the concept here, that the Nefesh HaBahamis, the Nefesh HaKis, once it's able to express itself, once the person can connect somewhat to his real identity, the Nefesh HaKis can empower the Nefesh HaKis then to scream back at the Nefesh HaBahamis and say, why are you hiding? Why are you, like, no, you're a lowlife, you're bad, you're a ra. And these are not expressions that Tanya made up, these are expressions that are written in the Gemara about the Yetzer Hara and the Nefesh HaBahamis, right? But Nefesh HaKis has to scream that. Why? And then you can let him, then there's the clarity, because when there's a complete disdain and a complete cancellation, at least in my mind, right, of anything that's ungodly, then that allows the light of the oneness of Hashem to take hold, and therefore that person can really then have that clarity that there's only one thing. And that Hashem is here just like he was before the world. And that's the whole avodah of the person, really, is to reach that belief, but ultimately not just the belief, the living of that concept that there's only one God. Ba'atam, and what's the reason for this, he says? Because in truth, in truth there is no substance to Sitra Achra. That's why Sitra Achra Klippa is compared to darkness. Why darkness? What is darkness? Truth is, we're about to say, is actually a deep philosophical concept, which is touched in Chassidus also, but for now, I'm just going to go with the simple shot. Darkness is not an entity. You have
it's an absence of light.
It's an absence of light, exactly. Actually, darkness has no substance to it. And that's why, it runs away from light. Right? When you bring the light of Hashem, you bring the oneness of Hashem, and you chase away the darkness, which is in essence what the Nefesh HaLakis is doing by screaming in the Nefesh HaBamis, right? There's light. There's automatic light. Kacha Sitra Acha, Sheesh B'chayas Harbe. Yes, Sitra Acha seems to have a lot of life. L'hachis ko ba'lachay matzmeim. To keep alive all the non-kosher animals, the Nefesh HaMasoilam, and the non-Jewish souls, all the Nefesh HaBamis B'Sroim, the Jewish Nefesh HaBamis, Kanal, etc. But it's good. Mikol Mokamar, Kol Chayusel, Mitzal, Asma Chasrol, Mitzal, Akdush, Kanal. But there's no substance, no independent substance of Nefesh HaBamis. Even the fact that I can give life to you, it can give physical life, even the fact that I can give life to Klippa and to Tumah and to Impurity and all these things, that's because Hashem wants it to. It really has no independence. And therefore, really, Nefesh HaBamis is totally subservient to Hashem. Like the darkness subservient to light. You light one candle, the darkness goes away. The only thing is that these forces of Klippa, who really don't contradict Hashem, because they're only there because of Hashem. But the problem is, when it comes to the Nefesh HaLakis of the person, Hashem gave it permission and the ability to lift itself up and fight the Nefesh HaLakis. It's only for the purpose that we should fight it back and subjugate it and knock it down. And we should try our best to cancel the Nefesh HaBamis and to send it away. Which means, because this whole concept in the Psukim that in Tagbi Kanesh, there's a whole concept that Klippa has chutzpah. Klippa raises itself with arrogance against Kedusha. He says it's only because Hashem wanted it to. Right? I'm not going to hold things inside, but he says also, why does Hashem want to do? Because he wants us to have that struggle. He wants us to become stronger. He wants us to overcome. And later, before he gave the moshel, he gives the moshel now also. Later on, he gives the moshel as well. That it's like the moshel the Zohar brings. The Zohar brings that Hashem, the Zohar brings a moshel of a king that wanted to make his son stronger and spiritually or morally resilient. And therefore he brought a zoyna, a prostitute, to entice the son. With the purpose of the son knowing that it's wrong and saying no, right? But the woman herself doesn't want the son to do it. What we're just doing is the king said so, right? So they say similar about the Yetzirah. Although there's different levels of the Yetzirah, although that's the Yetzirah in its origin. The Yetzirah, the beginnings of the Yetzirah is really just because Hashem wants the Yetzirah to entice us, because he wants us to overcome it, right? To overpower it. He says something which I'll just explain outside, because I want to finish the parak. He wants to bring an analogy for this concept that darkness runs away from light. So as long as you overpower the light and you chase away the darkness, it'll go. And then the light is all of a sudden there. So he brings from a parsha of the week we had a number of weeks ago, the parsha of the Meraglim, right? The Meraglim come back and give a bad report, correct? They even cry. Essentially, they gave into the Yetzirah, basically, right? They cry. And they say things which are really heretical, and they really believe that it's not possible for us to go and conquer the land of Eretz Israel. Implying even that maybe it's not possible for Hashem even. Right? That's how bad it was. And they cried the whole night, etc., etc. What does Hashem do the next day? He says, you cried for nothing, here's what you're going to cry about, right? I'm going to give you the Churban, Tisha B'Av. But at that moment, he said, you're going to have to. You sinned, you did a terrible thing, Hashem was upset with them, now you're stuck in the desert for 40 years. Okay. What happens the very next day? A whole bunch of you didn't wake up and say, we're going to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, they made a mistake because Hashem didn't want it then. Right? The next morning, the Yidden woke up and they were very, very upset and they said, let's go, we've got to go to Eretz Yisrael. So Al Terebu says, what do you mean? What changed? It was a terrible land, right? You weren't able to conquer it. You worked it out that strategically it's impossible to go and conquer that land. So now you change your mind all of a sudden, overnight. You didn't even go back to see how you can conquer it, right? This is very simple. Because Yidden, actually, every Yid is a believer. Yisrael ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim, because ultimately, deep down, the identity of a Yid is Nefesh HaLakis. And the Nefesh HaLakis sees and only wants the oneness of Hashem, and the Nefesh HaLakis has complete clarity. It's the Nefesh HaBamis that has such chutzpah that rises with arrogance to block the Nefesh HaLakis. Right? And there's different levels of klippah. Ultimately, the yeshus, the ego that we have, that's the worst klippah. That's like a molek, that's the idea of yeshus, of arrogance, chutzpah, the Gemara says, right, all these things. It knows it's ridiculous, because what are you blocking? You're blocking a truth? You're telling me it's day now, it's not day, it's night? You talk me into that's night now? I mean, that's like an unbelievable chutzpah, right? Nefesh HaBamis knows itself that it's daytime now, right? But Hashem wants us to do that, because He wants us to work. That's the whole avodah. The avodah of a person is thinking. But when we taka do that, the Nefesh HaKis is a little bit contacted, so to speak, right? And then it's able to really... I mean, what happened? Again, go back to the story of the Meraglim. What happened to the story? So Hashem bashed them up a little bit. Screamed at them. They were lucky. Hashem didn't scream at us, but He screamed at them, right? And He made it very clear that you did the wrong thing. They were broken. When you're broken, then the Amunah comes out. The Amunah comes out, let's go to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, Hashem says, too late, you can't go. Right? Now you can't go, because it's not about you, it's about what Hashem wants. Now Hashem doesn't want you to go. Finished. Okay. There were a few people that tried, and they got punished. They got killed, actually. They got attacked. Yeah? Because Hashem wants to do yesterday, and Hashem doesn't want you. It's all about what Hashem wants you to do, right? But they all wanted to go because that's what happened. As soon as the klippah went away, the light came out. So that's the summary of the whole perek. I mean, that's the whole perek, essentially. So again, perek is now divided into two, in a specific order. So the perek started off by saying, we have timtum alev, we have the blockage of the heart. That's not letting in the light of the Nefesh HaKis. The Bein is not able to daven properly. He's not able to have the love of Hashem properly. Right? Part one is, your Nefesh HaBamis is blocking. You are the Nefesh HaBamis, even the Bein. So you've got to find ways to break it up. Let in the light. Putting it down. You're a klippah. You're far from Hashem. You have stupid dreams. You did once upon a time. You did the Averis. And even if you didn't, your thoughts were not always pure. So you have a thick Nefesh HaBamis. That's why you're far. And that will feel upset. And upsetness is like the moshel of the Zohar. It will break up the wood, so the fire will take place. We'll catch. When the fire starts to catch on, then you can contact the real you on a deeper level. You use Nefesh HaKis, then you can switch the role. Nefesh HaKis can now take over, finish off the job by completely chasing away and screaming, so to speak, at the clip of the Nefesh HaBamis and the Eitz Sahara, and then the light just sets in and the oneness of Hashem is clear. And then you're back to letting in the light and having that oneness of Hashem and that love to be able to connect to the oneness of Hashem, knowing that Hashem is here just like He always was. That's Perek Chavtes. Okay? Then is the next Perek is next Perek. And yeah. Okay, well. Okay.